Welcome, everybody, to episode 103 of Game Store Profits, the podcast where two guys talk about games, God, and just the intersection between those two. My name is Mike Perna.
And I'm Jeff Romo.
Jeff, I gotta tell you, it is super happy for me to announce this. I mean, I'm gonna tell you that I haven't played much of anything.
No.
Which has been the common opening for the podcast. But in the off chance that people are listening to us right now and aren't on any of the social media that we're on, because I put it everywhere, I'm happy to announce that Inroads Ministries is officially recognized as a nonprofit. We have received our 501c3 status, and we are officially a thing.
That's right. And for those who'd like to see us do a happy dance, please tune into our YouTube channel, because it was done in copious amounts.
3/4 of the board did a happy dance, and that was only because one of us was not present.
Yeah, he was out in the woods. We guaranteed that. Not that we put him there.
Somewhere out in the woods, he decided to up and happy dance.
That's
just
right.
Just for no reason at all, just feeling the fact that he needed to happy dance.
That's right. A bear, a badger, and a puma got a show.
I don't think he would be happy if he had a puma in that close of proximity. I will say that my life has not been completely without gaming, because this morning I found myself doing a little bit of recording for the good people at Gamers Table. I have no idea which one of the guys, if any, they're going to use from my audio, but I'm going to tell you that I'm super happy about what I got to read. Awesome. In case you don't know, Gamers Table is an amazing role-playing game podcast.
Literally one of the best that I've heard. I mean,
I would agree with that completely. Yeah. I will, because of our audience being probably a lot different than their audience, I will say that I wouldn't let your kids listen to it automatically, because there is some language issues. But if that doesn't bother you, like it doesn't bother us, it's an amazing, amazing podcast. And one of the things that put them above and beyond the call, like they're usually just awesome to begin with, but what put them above and beyond the call is their actual plays. You know, you guys have probably seen us on our YouTube channel playing Dungeons & Dragons. Luke's about ready to do Edge of the Empire. Jeff is about ready to do Victoriana. And sometime in the distant future, I'm going to do Numenera.
Literally, but in the distant future. How ironic.
In the distant future.
Yeah.
But what these guys do is they don't just do the plays where they record them playing. There is part of that. But what they do is that they do dramatizations of what happened. Like, they take what they get at the table and what they'd recorded there and bring it out into this radio play kind of amazing production. Well, on a whim.
Yeah,
the
amazing thing about these guys is the amount of editing that must go into it. I know, Mike, you know a little bit about some of the editing challenges. I've been doing that with the En-ROADS plays as well, but I mean, they are just painstaking in making sure every little thing is edited out. And I mean, you nary hear a dice roll. It's basically, like you said, the results of those dice rolls and just how they act it out. And they call it theater. You know, it's not even, hey, we're doing an actual play. I mean, they mention it, but I mean, the title of the thing is, what is it? Openly Gamer Theater.
Oh, Openly Gamer, right? Theater.
Yeah.
So. And I'll tell you what, man. They do an amazing job. The first one I heard was actually Victoriana. It actually was part of the reason why I ended up buying the system.
Yep.
They've done Conan. They've done Call of Cthulhu, which was a lot of fun. Their Call of Cthulhu was great. And they're getting
Star
ready.
Wars.
Yeah, they did that as well. They're also getting ready to do, I believe they've played the game. They're just getting together the more narrative parts of this one. They're about ready to open up their Shadowrun game.
Mm-hmm.
And on a whim, I hit Twitter and I said, I have some random gaming stuff that I would love to see happen. And I forget what some of them, like one of them was, I said, hopefully one day at a con, I want to see somebody cosplaying as Drogon, my character from our play by post. I forget what the second one was. And then the third one is that I want to be an NPC in a Gamers Table actual play. Well, apparently, the guys from Gamers Table saw that, and before I knew it, I was getting test scripts and asked if I wanted to be an NPC.
Love it.
And shortly after that, literally this morning, I was given a bunch of different small characters that they needed immediately and said, here you go, if you want to read for any of these, you can. So most of them were just tiny little parts. They were all like, the easiest one for me was a dwarven doorman whose lines basically consisted of, hey, you! Like, it was super easy, super easy for me to do that. But I'm not going to lie, I'm really hoping that one of the guys that they had me read for is not only who they use, I'm really hoping that they let me do him multiple times, because it's fantastic. One of the characters is a technomancer.
Technomancers. The bane of every DM's existence in Shadowrun.
And so she has, you know, Shadowrun being all cyberpunk, the way you navigate through the internet is more of it's almost a physical thing. Mm-hmm. And when she goes to the net, there are these sprites that help her out. And apparently one of them, she has named Mr. Bojangles. And Mr. Bojangles is a bear dressed up in a jester's outfit. And and I got to read for Mr. Bojangles. I'm not going to lie. I really hope that someday soon I can tell you, yes, tune into the first episode of their podcast where you'll get to hear me be Mr. Bojangles, because I had a ton of fun reading that. But yeah, but that has been the extent between that and planning TavernCon, which I'm super excited about that. I don't know what we're getting yet, but every once in a while I want to throw out a teaser of kind of like the raffle-y kind of things the prizes we're going to give away.
Right.
And the first one I gave out, I actually gave out on our Facebook page, and I said the first thing that I wanted to raffle off is from Gen Con last year, I got a copy of Dark Dungeons signed by the director, and I'm going to raffle that off.
Heck yeah.
The other thing that I'll tease out here is that I don't know exactly what he's sending us yet, but oft guest and occasional writer for the site, T. Morris, has decided that he's going to be sending us something for donation. Now, I don't know what this is. Maybe I'll know by the time, you know, this goes live, and maybe future Mike will jump in here. But as of now, I don't know what he's sending us.
Could it be a dirigible?
Possibly. What's probably more likely is a copy of the Ministry Initiative, which is the role-playing game based in their universe.
Yeah.
But I don't know that yet. Again, maybe future Mike will come in, maybe not. But that he's sending us something, and I'm super excited about that. All right, guys, future Mike here because, well, I got practically summoned at this point. But I'm going to tell you that I still have no idea what they're sending us. T. Morris and the incomparable Philippa Ballantyne have been very busy. And I was informed that, you know, I gave them the address and they should be sending something. But I don't know what yet. So hopefully in future episodes I'll be able to let you know about the deliciousness that they sent me. Until then, you'll just have to deal with the fact that awesomeness abounds and mystery is prevalent. So I hope that, you know, is sufficient for you. Until then, this is Future Mike signing out. But very yeah, cool. But so planning TavernCon, recording that. I'm going to be playing Doomtown tomorrow.
Yeah, I was a little bummed about recording tonight because we wouldn't be able to hear about Doomtown this broadcast.
Oh, well, we're not ending anytime soon. Trust me, there's going to be no shortage of me wanting to talk about Doomtown. Anytime I play it, I will want to talk about it. So I look forward to, well, no, it's not tomorrow, actually. It's going to be Friday. So a couple days from when we're recording this. But I will get to play, and I will get to play what I'm calling my Gamora mission deck, which is going to be a Law Dog deck with some blessed dudes and maybe some gadgets just for flavor. Nice. There's part of me, I like doing decks on theme. I mean, that just makes sense, you know, but I especially, I will even make a generally considered garbage deck if the theme entertains me enough.
Nice.
So one well,
if
of
you're
things...
if you're good enough at the game, I mean, you can make a play at it. So
yeah, you say that like I'm good at this. I enjoy the heck out of it, but I'm not good by any means. But I've also toyed with the idea of doing a Deus Ex Machina, a God in the Machine, and do all gadgets. And, instead of doing Law Dogs, make it do Morgan and do all gadgets and bless dudes. We'll see how that works.
That sounds really good.
I have a ton of fun. Quite frankly, I like deck building almost as much as I like just playing the game, which is saying something because I like playing the game a lot.
No, I never would have guessed that from your love of Netrunner.
Yeah. So, is there anything before we have a really cool topic today. We have some in light of the fact that Origins just happened.
Just
Dice Tower Con, Gen Con, these are coming right around the corner. In fact, at this point, we are 40 days away from Gen Con.
Yeah.
But so we're going to talk about some of that stuff. But before we do that, Jeff, is there anything that you've been playing lately?
Well, I bought Tokaido. So
I went down the
Japanese rabbit hole and I picked that up. It's gorgeous. I'm waiting for it to arrive, but I've seen enough of the game to know what to expect when it gets here. So I'm really looking forward to learning the rules and getting ready for the trip out to the mountain, which is in about 2 weeks. So really looking forward to that. To be honest, I've actually been prepping a lot for Victoriana. I mean, it links directly into what we'll be talking a little bit about here shortly, but just, you know, getting into that game and learning the rules and understanding the rules and just the whole ambiance is just off the charts awesome. And it's been helping me through my Shadowrun withdrawals because we didn't get a chance to play this weekend, and then next weekend's probably not going to go with Father's Day and everything. So
right.
Yeah, getting the itchies. I've been sending out little text messages and stuff to try and make sure the game still kind of keeps moving forward, you know, as they're doing some side investigations and stuff, but that's not enough.
I'm not going to lie. I may or may not. Now, I have to get new character sheets because I think there's some changes from... Because my original book, the book that I have the hard copy of, is of second edition. This is, we're going to be playing third edition.
Oh, so for Victoriana. Yeah.
I got to see if there are some changes to the character sheet, but I'm making Dov Boltsin, the Russian butcher, the Bearman butcher. I'm making
Bearman
him.
Butcher. Oh man, I'm looking so forward to it. I'm hoping the folks that we've pinged to join up are going to still be up and at 'em by the time we get around to rolling dice on this one, but definitely looking forward to getting that one on the recording and actually just plain old having fun with it. I cannot wait. So yeah, I'm getting into the board game thing. I'm really hankering to get Tokaido. And by the way, I also got Gloom. I went ahead and picked that up too. So that'll be on its way. But it's been kind of like a little void right now the last couple weeks where I haven't really played too much. So got some more writing in, doing the play-by-post thing, which spun up with some really nice role play the last few days. So actually one of our guys from that crew is going to be joining the Victoriana thing. So definitely looking forward to that.
That's going to be a ton of fun, man. He's quality. I really enjoy the game that we've got going on our play-by-post. That is, it's some quality happening right now. I mean, yeah. we've been playing with those guys for what, like a year and change.
Yeah, we crossed over a year, I think, in April. So yeah. It's been out. It's been a thing. It's interesting, though, like when you look at the timing, I think we mentioned this on like En-ROADS plays or something, but the timing of it is that we've probably worked our way through a single module, like a Pathfinder module, let's say. You know, it's not something that is written. It's all written by me. But at the same time, it's taken about a year and a half in play by post to get through it. But yeah, you get some cool writing out of it, though.
I still love the fact that you called it Absalom in Shadow and we're not anywhere near Absalom.
We're not even there yet. I know. I was like, man, that title was a mistake. We're going to get there. I promise. It's going to be like 2020, but we're going to be there.
This is why I don't title my games at all.
Oh man, that's hilarious.
I mean, that being said, I played a game of a second session of Numenera with the folks that I play with here that I'm running the game for.
Cool.
And I had all these expectations of getting like deep in this game. They got so stuck up on one point, and we didn't get anywhere near where I thought we would. So again, I don't name anything because I have no idea what's going to happen.
That's what random NPC generators are for, man. So you can keep up with that little tomfoolery going on with the players. Always trying to muck up our stories. What the heck?
Well, let's kind of move forward on this because we've actually got quite a bit to talk about here.
Yeah.
We decided that we needed to talk about, even though neither one of us was going to be at Origins, even though I'm the only one from Inroads that's going to be at Gen Con, you can't avoid the news and the hype of various games. We are only going to scratch the surface here because there is just so much stuff. The Gen Con preview came out on BoardGameGeek, has over 130 games on it.
Yeah, we'll be here a while.
We are not even going to kind of scratch the surface on this one, but we decided that each one of us was going to take a couple of the games that are getting like nonstop hype and say which ones we're excited about from the list.
Yeah.
And then we were also going to come up with a couple titles that are from beyond like the hype. The hype train has passed all of these by. They may have had some hype when they first came out, but no one's talking about them anymore. They're old news, but we think that they're worth playing, and kind of explain why we think they're worth playing. So Jeff, how about you open us up? I've done a bunch of talking here. How about you open us up?
Right.
What is one of the games that either from Origins or soon to be released at Gen Con that just really got you excited?
Well, we're going to share one, but we'll go to that one after this, maybe. Oddly enough, I might have mentioned it, but one of the first games I jumped in on was actually with Basha and his wife. So our couples got together and we played Munchkin. And Munchkin's a lot of fun. It's so silly. I mean, just the idea that I know of the four people there, I was the only one who was getting a lot of the inside jokes related to D&D, that kind of thing. You know, so it was a lot of fun, just me snickering while the other three are looking at me kind of funny. Mike's slowly getting those other things, Mike Bosch is. But they're coming out with a Munchkin Steampunk Deluxe from Steve Jackson Games, obviously. It's got different art on there. It's not Phil Foglio, I think is his name. It's Phil Foglio instead of John Kovalik.
Well, to be fair, if it's the Phil Foglio I know,
yeah,
he's no slouch either.
No,
he and his wife do Girl Genius, which is amazing.
Yeah, and that's exactly him. And the style is, you know, it's different, but it still has that kind of whimsy to it, you know, which is really cool. He's done work for like Magic, The Gathering, Dungeon Magazine. Like you said, he's working with his wife a lot too. But I mean, this thing comes with, you know, it comes with a nice board, standees. It's 3 to 6 players, you know, your standard fare, but it's just a bunch of steampunky goodness, you know. I mean, just looking at the different options of play and everything. But you know, it's Munchkin, I get it, but it's Steampunk Deluxe, come on. So I'm kind of excited about it because I'd like to. That would mean that if I bought this, it would be my second time playing Munchkin. We only played a couple rounds that one night and I got hooked, so it doesn't take much for me.
I will throw my hat because there's a lot of people out there that like poo-poo on Munchkin, and I know why. I understand why.
Yeah.
Because at its core, there's not a whole lot of gameplay.
Mm-mm.
And that's actually the joke. You kick the door in, you deal with what's there next.
Right.
Like, that's it. It's not exactly a deep strategy game.
No.
At the same point, while it's not a game I'd go to anymore, it's still in my collection. It's still part of the Inroads Traveling Library. In fact, I'm actually getting... There's somebody who's donating a whole crap ton of Munchkin to add to the library.
Nice.
It's a fun game if you get the right people playing it. If you get people that have that sense of humor, It's hilarious.
And that's the thing with the group we had the sense of humor, and I had the added bonus of all the inside jokes, so that was just perfect. But yeah, you start, you know, you get into a group that's all Cthulhu fans or Lovecraft fans. I mean, you get the Cthulhu version, you're like, just it's just fun. You know, it's a quick game. It's like a fast-forwarded dungeon crawl, but I don't know, there's something about it. And this is kind of like what I hear of other people playing it that do enjoy the game. There's just something about it that is enjoyable. You know, it's lighthearted fun.
Yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah. All right, you're up next, man.
The first one I'm going to reference is a game, and this is going to be not new for anybody. This is going to be fairly obvious. You can do the math. This is practically Game Store Profits bingo at this point. So, Isaac Vega designed a game.
Yeah.
Obviously, because it's Isaac, it's Plaid Hat.
Oh, yeah.
And it involves a bunch of cards, custom dice, and just gorgeous artwork.
Okay, I'm going to pause you there. I feel like the dog on that video with the guy talking about bacon, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, yeah. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
It's a game called Ashes.
Oh, yeah.
Rise of the Phoenixborn. The whole idea of Ashes is that each one of these people have this... They're considered the Phoenixborn. They're special. They've been imbued with the power of the Phoenix. And the only way they can get more power is by taking out the other Phoenixborn and essentially taking the part of the Phoenix's essence that they had and bringing it to themselves. So the goal is basically, this is a 2-4 player game where you are trying to take out all your competition. And I haven't seen a lot of the gameplay yet. I'm super hoping that I can get in, because I try to demo at least one game while at Gen Con, even though I'm busy with the booth and stuff like that. I try to at least get one game in, and I'm really trying to make sure that game is Ashes, because I'm really intrigued by how this works. There's deck building, but there's also an interesting setup where, kind of like with Doomtown, you get to pick your opening hand. Where in Doomtown, you pick your opening dudes, the guys that are playing. Right. In this, you pick your opening hand. It's a combination of cards and dice, which I'm really intrigued by. And, like, everything about this game seems really, really cool. And it's supposedly a quick game. The site says that it plays in 15 to 30 minutes. And that is fantastic. That takes all the depth and awesomeness of some of these other card games and brings it down in a very approachable kind of way, in a very, you know, quick hit kind of game. Man, I'm super excited for Ashes. Literally, if it weren't for the fact that money is tight right now, I would already pre-order it. If money isn't so tight for you, check it out. Go to Plaid Hat's website and order and pre-order it, because it's $15 cheaper if you pre-order it, plus they give you all the promotional stuff.
And send Mike pictures.
If you want to get a copy and donate it, I will tell you that our donations are now tax deductible.
Heck yeah. We're live, folks. We're live.
But yeah, no.
Didn't last year at Gen Con, didn't you start stalking Plaid Hat a little bit?
I started stalking Plaid Hat long before last year.
Well, I mean physically, like you were.
I actually interviewed Isaac last year to talk about Dead of Winter. So
That's right. Which is on my hit list. I know that's not a new game, but I mean, yeah, that's on my hit list.
Yeah.
Just mostly because of what you said, and then secondly because I saw the game and saw it played, and I was just like, yeah.
It's
that's
amazing.
On my target.
All right, so you're number two, because I think did we both have three that we were hyped up for, or was that just me?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'll do a real brief one on one, and then I'll switch over to the I'll do a real brief one, and then I'll jump into the main one that I really liked. So the first one, and we were talking a little bit before the podcast started, it's called Zombicide Black Plague, which is another installment in the long series that they've been running of Zombicide, and it's by a company that I find has been aptly named, Cool Mini or not. And simply because they make gorgeous minis. I mean, the first thing I noticed when I was looking at a review of this thing was the art on the board, the card quality, and the minis. I was thinking, man, I'm going to totally use that for D&D. I may just get the game for that, and come to find out that's what some people actually do. They'll get the game, and they'll think, oh, the game's pretty good, it's average, but then the minis. 71 minis come with this thing. And they almost literally crashed Kickstarter because they already jumped past all of their stretch goals, except for, I think, one. But that's because one of the last stretch goals is a target number of $1.9 million. And they're already at 1.8. There's crazy money getting tossed their way. But yeah, it's cool looking. It's a 1 to 6 players. It's cooperative. It's in a fantasy setting this time, as opposed to other areas or time periods. They've got a new inventory system to where you can actually have, like, you know, body slots or backpack slots of where you want to put your gear, that kind of thing. It's got a nice sliding experience tracker, and you can also track your wounds, that sort of thing. It's got elves and dwarves now because you're in a fantasy setting, and if you didn't have that, there'd be a riot. But one of the stretch goals, which was kind of cool, is a Wolfsburg expansion where you get zombie wolves, which to me, just the phrase sounds awesome. You know, that's like a garage band name or something. Welcome to Zombie Wolves.
Let it roll off your tongue. Zombie that's wolves.
That's right. So yeah, that's kind of my brief primer. You want to dive in on that one, or?
I will just say I have not played this game. We were kind of talking about this before we started recording. The thing that I always like to watch with games like this is that obviously it's got its fanboys, and I'm almost in danger of creeping in on somebody's fandom, because cool mini or not, everything they've done has been uber popular. Mm-hmm. I haven't played it. I can't say one way or the other, but what I've heard from a bunch of people who haven't crossed over into that fanboy state of mind is that they say it's an average game. It's good. It's not great. It's good. But the minis and everything, everyone is buying this game because of the minis. And no one will argue against that. No one, even the people who say it's an average game, will say, but oh my goodness, these minis are fantastic. But I have not played Zombicide. So actually, if you guys want, if you're listening to this, go ahead either on iTunes or on our website. If you guys like Zombicide, I'd love to hear comments, because I have not, like I said, I've not played it, but I hear very mixed reviews from the various peoples on the internet talking about this game.
Yeah, definitely let us know about it, because, I mean, if it's a game that's worthwhile that, like, you can get, you know, 5 plays a year, that kind of thing out of it, I mean, that's probably worth it, I would think, just because of the other accoutrement that comes along with it. All right, so the main one that I want to jump into was Champions of Midgard from Grey Fox Games. It's Viking themed, and that's pretty much enough for me. You know, you say Vikings, I'm thinking, yeah, I'm in. One of my first characters I ever played in D&D was a barbarian Viking, and he's still my favorite to now. But it's, you know, it's a worker placement, resource gathering. So it's got some standard fare there, obviously. You're collecting resources to build weapons. You need food. You need wood to make long ships. It's 2 to 4 players. Let's see here. You're basically playing as a leader of a Viking clan, and your clans work together to try and defend a harbor town from, you know, anything from trolls to dark dwarves, or what do you call them? Drawer?
I've never been able to pronounce that.
I don't know. It's written. Somebody Google it and let us know how to pronounce it. We'll appreciate you.
I've always pronounced it Duragar.
Duragar. I like that. I'll go with it. Duragar. And then there's all the other Norse beasties that are out there. So, like, you're basically trying to defend this town, but you're also trying to earn glory. So it's kind of a cooperative, but it's also competitive, because you're trying to basically score the most points by the end of the game to become the Jarl of this particular town. Again, I'm a very visual person, so the last two games I said the artwork's amazing. That's one of the reasons it kind of drew to me. I'm a kind of a judge a game by its cover almost type thing, but then I saw the pieces. They got nice wooden meeples. And again, the artwork on everything from the 121 cards to the board itself looks really good. And it won the Dice Tower Seal of Excellence. Why am I doing a French accent for a Viking? That's just not even right. But yeah, no, it looks really good. And I believe it's not too cost deficient or cost challenging, I guess. I think it's going to be in the 40s to the 50s. So
that's not bad.
Not terrible. So that's okay. So I squeezed in two. So I think if you want the honors to go for this last one.
Well, no, I have another one.
Oh, good, good.
I have another one from me, and then we can both of us talk about the one that we shared on our lists. The one that I'm going to put technically is out now. Technically, if the moon is full and the planets are in alignment, you might find this available right now. It is a party game. I guess we'd call it a party game. It's very light. It's called Spyfall. Mm-hmm. The reason I'm putting it on the hype train is because even though it's available, it's not really available.
Explain yourself, Perna.
Spyfall was originally released overseas. It was, I believe it was Essen that it was originally released at. And what it basically is that every person, there's a series of cards in front of you, and they're all different locations. And all the players get the same card that has one of those locations. And the other person is the spy. And their card just says spy. So now you start interviewing each other to try and ask questions about the location. The goal being, you're trying to make sure that if you're the spy, no one knows you're the spy. So you're basically trying to make up stuff about a location based on what the other people have told you. So
nice.
The questions might be like, would you take your kids there? You know, was it easy for you to get to your location? And just stuff like that that's vague enough that it could be anywhere on the board, but specific enough that if you have that location in front of you, you'd be able to answer it. So it requires a lot of quick thinking because you're trying to make sure that you're not tipping off the other players that you're the spy and really have no idea where you're located. This game is amazing, and it just got released, and I'm happy to say it got released. It got released at Origins. I had people at Origins, but it sold out before they could get to it.
Come on, man. You got my hopes up.
Hold
and everything
on.
I was thinking
hold
about.
On. This story's not done.
Okay.
I went to Cool Stuff, which is my go-to when it comes to buying things online. They sold out.
This is turning into a tragedy, Perna.
I went to Miniatures Market. They sold out.
Okay.
However, and here's where we have the turn. However, right. I was sitting at work, and I happened to hit Twitter because I work in IT, and it's a lot of doing nothing. Mm-hmm. I happened on Twitter, and I saw Miniatures Market come on and said, by the way, we've received another shipment of Spyfall.
Click.
I immediately went and purchased it. Not an hour and a half later, they were sold out again. However,
You got it though, right?
I will say that it is currently, according to the emails, it is currently on its way to me, and it will be here for TavernCon, and I'm super excited. However, I will tell you that if you do not own this already, I pray for you that you will obtain this, because, oh my goodness, they must not have made enough. They must not have put together enough of a production run because they only took, apparently the people who are at Origins told me they only brought 100 copies to Origins. They said it was gone like within hours.
So some people must really like this game. I mean,
this game got hyped like it's going out of style and good luck.
Well, it got a couple Golden Geeks, right?
I don't know if it got awards or not, but I'm going to tell you, holy crap.
See, now, when I was reading about it, it sounded a little bit like, what's that, Spectre Ops? Like a kind of like a party version of Spectre Ops almost.
Well, there's absolutely no board. It's literally just a series of cards.
Okay. All right. I gotcha.
But cool. Yeah, no, it's a ton of fun. All right. That being said. There is a game that I saw it in the Dice Towers Origins previews. I didn't even know this was a thing. I didn't even know that this was a game that was coming out. This completely flew under my radar.
How did we not know it was a thing?
I don't know, but we have made up for that.
Yes.
There is a game coming out, and it is called Clockwork Wars.
Oh, just let it drift.
Jeff and I saw this, and both of us started to drool.
Yep.
This game, it has a modular board. It is all about hidden movement, which this made me just go giddy. Because I have always been fascinated by the game Diplomacy. I've been fascinated by the way it is where everybody makes their move in secret and they all reveal at the same time, moving stuff and getting into epic fights and treachery and betrayal. But Diplomacy takes forever. This game supposedly takes an hour.
That's what I heard.
And not only is it just awesome, like, just the thought of it mechanically, it, you know, we've already kind of gotten on the fact that we like steampunk stuff. We're talking about Victoriana and Steampunk Munchkin and all that.
Sure.
This has a very steampunk vibe, and there are four armies. And one of them is just, you know, regular old people, because, of course, they're regular old people.
And they're called pure breeds, right?
Yeah.
Whatever. Let's get to the real ones.
Then there are dog people called mongrels. There are ape people, which I believe we said were called troglodytes.
Correct.
And there are rhino people called the rhinox.
Yes. My favorite.
The fact that there's this hidden movement on a modular board so it can change with each play. The fact that it has the shorter play time. Man, I want to play this so badly. The site currently says that it's got a July release, which I gotta think, if it has a July release, it's gotta be Gen Con, because I don't know why you'd release something before Gen Con. So, yeah. I want to be playing this. I want to see it. I will probably be bringing it back home. Right now, it's neck and neck with me, because financially, I can't come home with as much loot from Gen Con as I'd want. Because I want a lot.
We got to be realistic.
I got to be realistic. So I'm probably only going to get one, maybe two games. And so right now it's neck and neck between Ashes and Clockwork Wars. I don't know which one's going to win out in the end.
It's going to be quality. It's going to be the quality. That's going to be the decider.
Either way, I win.
Yeah, that's right.
All
right. I mean, come on. There's Spymaster action tiles. There's, like you said, the multiple hexes that are going in here. You've got... I mean, okay, there's three miniature reference cards that are called the Leviathan, Steam Tank, and the Guardian. You've got tokens, the Operative, the Hunter, the Crashers, the Engineers. I mean, come on. This is so beautiful.
If the gameplay is even remotely fun, I'm buying this game. That's what I'm going to sell you. Because it's
pretty much,
it's
right?
Fantastic.
Yeah, but, I mean, they've got... And the cool thing is that it could be cooperative, it can be free-for-all. It's got variations, it's got two versus two. I mean, it's flexible. So that's economical, Mike. In my mind,
all right.
That's economical.
Speaking of economical, we don't want to completely go on the hype train. Because there's a lot of hype, and there will always be a lot of hype. This is convention season. We have entered hype town. But... we also know that there are a lot of games that we have and we have played that don't get the hype but deserve a playthrough. And before we kind of make the turn of the podcast and start talking about more of the spiritual stuff, we wanted to make sure that we didn't just end on the hype train. Because everybody's playing the hype train right now. Everybody is just going up for the new hotness. We wanted to give some love to some things that we've played in the past that deserve another look. So now, Jeff, how about you just start us off with one?
All right. This one comes from 1981, so probably before a few of our listeners were even born, so I know you might not have heard of it. No, I'm kidding. You guys have had to have heard of this. It's Axis and Allies. I'm totally reaching into the historical notes and stuff, but if you guys remember my first time on the podcast, this was the first game I ever played with my friends. It's not a short time game. It's listed at 180 minutes, but I guarantee you it lasts longer. 2 to 5 players. It's a World War II strategy game. It's economy. It's war gaming. It's World War II. It's a whole bunch of things that are just awesomeness in my book. I don't know. It's one of those things where you're spending half the time as the setup period. where you're trying to put all the pieces where it needs to go. And after a while, you get a rhythm. You get quicker. I think we went from taking a half hour to set up to all the way down to about 20 minutes. Not too shabby. But then, like, the games, they would last, you know, 3-4 hours sometimes. But if you're real fast, if you don't sit there and kind of mench over your game, you know, like, you know, rubbing your hands together, trying to think, how am I going to save a factory from getting bombed the next turn, that kind of thing, you could go pretty fast. Like I said, 180 minutes. But, yeah, it'd be better than, like, 3 or 4 or 5 hours like we played it.
Before I get into mine, I do want to do a kind of an honorable mention in light of the fact that we're talking about, as was my list before, designed by Isaac Vega, put out by Plaid Hat, and is generally just awesome. I have to mention City of Remnants. I'm not going to go too much into City of Remnants. I've written about it for the site. I have talked about it on the podcast. I have declared it openly on many, many places that it is my current favorite game that I own in my collection. It's well worth a look. It is criminally underrated. More people should be playing it. I'm just going to say that because, like I said, I've talked about it at length and we're running short on time.
Sure.
So the first one I'm going to go into is a game that for a while there was getting a lot of hype. I remember I heard about it before I ever played it and I bought it because of the hype. But at the same point, I haven't heard anyone even talk about it. It even had an expansion recently. So I was wondering if the hype train was going to come back, but it never did. It's a game called Seasons. Seasons is a game that intrigues me, because in most games you're all about destroying the other player or being better than the other. This is about creating awesome. Literally. You're all playing as wizards that are competing at who can create the best stuff with their magic, who can summon the greatest creatures, who can make the greatest artifacts. You're collecting these amazing dice that are just, they're just absolutely gorgeous, brightly colored, well-designed, roll, you just thunk, 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 thunk on your table. The whole game is just this amazing experience. It has drafting elements, set collection stuff, because you can start really building up a kind of engine of awesome as one thing feeds another thing, which feeds another thing. And I don't know why more people don't play it, because it's gorgeous. I will say my benchmark for gaming is if my wife likes it, because my wife isn't a gamer. So if she loves a game, you know it has to be good. And she loves Seasons. I've never had her turn down an opportunity to play Seasons. I would definitely recommend it. It's so cool. The artwork is amazing. The dice are fantastic.
See, now I'm wondering about Tokaido. Now, maybe I should have gotten Seasons.
You're
maybe
entering
I should get both.
I'm about to say, you're entering into board gaming, Jeff. There is no one or the other. All right, what's your next one?
Oh, boy. You know what? I kind of blew it out the first part was talking about Munchkin. That's kind of what I like to go back to. It's just, like I said before, it's just fun. It's just good-natured fun. Other than that, to be honest, I just haven't been in the industry long enough to, or in the hobby long enough to really kind of build that out. I had a dabble with Game of Thrones a few years back, but it kind of blew my mind. You know, where I'm trying to keep up with the intrigue, and so it's hard for me to recommend.
All right, well, I have one left. I could
go for it.
I could do this. Like half my collection would fit into this, just because I love all these games. But one that I don't know. It's been around a while. It's had a number of expansions. I've mentioned it on the podcast before, but I don't hear a lot of people talking about it. Is Cutthroat Caverns. And the thing I love about Cutthroat Caverns is the fact that, in a way, you're all kind of... This, to me, is the first instance of semi-cooperative gaming. Because you're cooperating because you have to work together in order to defeat these monsters in this cave. But it's semi-cooperative because you're all also trying to be the person who scores that last hit and gets the glory of the kill. So you're combining, we have to put this guy down quick, I'm going to hit him real hard, with, I'm going to faint and kind of back off because so-and-so is going to hit him and they're going before me. And if they go before me, then I need to make sure that I position myself in the right place to come back next turn and get the kill. So right. It's an absolutely fascinating kind of mental math that you start doing. Like, do I help you? Do I hurt you? If I hurt you here to get something later for myself, is it going to come back and bite me in the butt? It's a really interesting dynamic, and I think more people should be playing it because, like I said, there are a bunch of expansions, and if nothing else, you need to play because there's a card called the Werebore. And the Werebore, basically, every time it attacks somebody, they're handed a card. And at the end, once the Werebore is killed, you flip over the card, and somebody else might be a Werebore. And then you have to fight that Werebore. And if that person hits you, then you suddenly have to flip over your card, and you might be a Werebore. And this is amazing, and people need to be playing it.
I am marking that down on my list. Gosh darn it, Perna. Come on, man.
Oh, I do this to people all the time. Every time I mention games, suddenly everyone's wallet starts emptying.
It's ridiculous.
But in a way, that's a perfect illustration right there. Because yeah. One thing that we were talking about as we were gearing up for this one is that the conversations of, we can't really afford another game. I already have a bunch of games. Why do I need this new thing? Oh my gosh, I need this new thing.
It's kind of easy to get excited.
The hype train is really easy to get on.
Yeah. And, makes a lot of stops.
And, you know, there's always this constant conversation with people. Of, you know, how much is it that, you know, you get onto the new hotness, you explore the new thing, you get excited about the new thing. Because quite frankly, I don't, you know, I'm going to get into, you know, the pluses and minuses of buying into the hype. But we understand why. The stuff that's coming out now is so amazing. If people who were gaming like 10, 20 years ago could see what we're playing with now, they would be amazed. Because games, the hobby in general, the materials, the components have come so far. So I don't want to just go and say, don't buy into the hype, because I'm just as guilty as any other human being about buying into the hype. But I don't know, the thing that really struck me, and something that has been brought to my attention, is the fact that since Jeff's come on, we've done a lot more scripture quoting. And I certainly don't mind that. I'm certainly pro scripture quoting. The one that came to mind as we started putting together these lists was in Ephesians 4. I'm just going to read from the version that I have here. It says, "So that we may no longer be children, tossed to and fro by the waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by human cunning, by craftiness and deceitful schemes." Now, obviously, that verse is talking about doctrine. That is talking about being solid in your faith and being solid in what you believe, so that every time somebody comes around with a different story with, hey, that sounds cool, you know the difference between what's true and right and what's wrong. But I think that you know, in a way, this hype train mindset, this must get new hotness, kind of has a lot to play into this. It's obviously it's a bit of a stretch, but I think it's within the bounds. I don't think that it's outside of the application to kind of apply this.
Yeah, and it speaks to motivation, you know. It speaks to, like, I mean, there's a reason why you go to the trade shows, and there's all the flashing lights, there's the awesome table setups, there's people enjoying the game, that kind of thing. And you'll experience it in Gen Con, of course. I saw a snapshot in Origins of a Shadowrun table. And I was like, oh my gosh, look at all the new stuff for Shadowrun. I mean, I only have the 5th edition core rulebook, but I could use so much more. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. But it's so easy to get caught up in that stuff because of the glitz and the glam, and it's the whole motivation to be the first one in the door to get it. You know, the new Apple iPhone syndrome, where you're just lining up around the corner to pick it up. Yeah, I think that scripture applies to that very well. It just kind of speaks to where our hearts are at. But also, the other side of it is what we're doing here. We're trying to bring up some of the older stuff that's out there still. You know, it's not necessarily you have to get it right now. You know, you could find other, you know, jewels or diamonds in the rough.
Well, the thing I like about it, and the reason why this kind of came to mind as I was thinking this through, was just the idea of we get so caught up in the new stuff. And the new stuff is awesome. I mean, we just spent the past 50 minutes talking about how awesome the new stuff is.
Clockwork Horse.
Yeah, I think it's good and right to be like be optimistic of where the hobby is. I think there's good stuff there, but I think that there's something to be said about understanding where we've come from. I mean, the fact that Catan is still a thing. I have to check myself. It's no longer Settlers of Catan. It's just Catan.
Just Catan. That's right.
And I think that there's something to be said about just grasping hold of that thing that got us here, about understanding, you know, and it wasn't that long ago. I mean, granted, it was back when Luke was still in the podcast, but we were talking about the concept of studying church history and studying the history of the faith, because it's important, and that stuff that happened then feeds into what we're doing now. And I think there's a danger in doing the new hotness, because you're always finding something new and you're always jumping on the new thing. And at some point it becomes so much about building the collection and buying the new thing that you forgot about why we're playing games in the first place.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's to be around the table. You know, it's the whole ministry here. We're about being with people. But, I've got to admit, I'm totally guilty of it immediately now, just simply because I'm first getting into the hobby. But at the same time, when we were talking about trying to reach into the annals of history of like the games we played or the things that we'd recommend, I went way back to Axis and Allies, because I'm thinking, you know, you've got this awesome strategy game that has given birth to a whole different genre of stuff. I mean, you come forward and you're looking at like Fire in the Sky or Fire in the Lake, you know, with that whole Vietnam simulator that is just completely way above and beyond intricacy. But you can still go out online and find people still playing Axis and Allies and getting together and enjoying that connection, because they know they've been there, they've played that game, and it's just something that you're like, oh yeah, that was a great move, and I remember that, and we were sitting around the table and we were laughing and the kids were there. I mean, you start getting that nostalgia effect as well.
Well, it was nice. Foundational.
Yeah.
There's stuff that was involved with that game, stuff that was built into its core, that so many people that are making games now are still looking at that.
Yeah.
They're still building off of what was put in front of them beforehand. Yeah. And I mean, come on, I don't think we have to work too hard to look at faith and understand that probably one of the best things that I ever got out of my education at Dallas was, at one point, a professor looked at us and he a super tall, lanky gentleman with the best way I could describe him, if you've ever been much for C.S. Lewis and the works of Narnia, he was Puddleglum. Yeah. He was this weird. he really was. He really is. He's an amazing man, and I won't say his name in case anybody's listening from Dallas and is upset that I made that.
but probably that's not a bad one. That's not bad.
But probably they know who it is anyway. But he took off his glasses and he looked at us. He says, "I read scripture as a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant male who was born in America. I can't not read scripture as a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant male who was born in America."
Right.
And he goes, "You're going to read from these people who read the book before you, who read the Bible before you, who prayed and who sought God with just as much fervency as you do, and thought of it completely differently. Always remember that they're reading the same Bible that you are. They're just reading it through a different lens." And Amen. And I and that even that has positive and negatives. And the negatives, you see these people who are coming up with this really crazy heretical stuff, and you also see these people who are reading it, and it's different from us. So depending on various degrees here, it doesn't matter what the degree is. You're understanding that there are people who have come before us who we're building on.
Mm-hmm.
Theology is a process. Theology is a way to see things. And we cannot do that apart from those who came before us, apart from the people who have been studying this before us. Doctrine has been refined and changed and tweaked for dozens of different reasons.
Right. Anything from commentaries to, you know, just some side, you know, side books that are for a specific book of the Bible, that kind of thing. You'll see differences as the years roll on. Yeah.
And even one of the most interesting things, I was talking to a guy who translated the Bible into, I want to say it was either Chinese or Korean. And he said, when you're doing this, you realize that there are certain liberties we have to take in order to really fully get what's being stressed in Scripture. Like, we read it and we go, you know, what's one of the illustrations that we use for Christ? He's the bread of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reason we say this and the reason he said it was because bread was a staple food. It was, right. It was what your diet was built on.
Right.
Well, in Asian cultures where bread is weird and it's rare and it's not really part of your diet, are you best served to translate it that way?
Right.
And,
it's got to be a thorough translation. It's got to go all the way to the back of the beginning when, you know, the whole reason bread was brought into the, brought to the Lord's table, that sort of thing. I mean, that's right. A passion to be able to do a translation like that, but you're keeping the frame of reference. You're keeping the meaning of what's being translated.
Exactly. Yeah. And what he said was, is that when they would translate those passages, they would translate it, "I am the rice of life."
Mm-hmm.
Because
it makes total sense.
Because that was the staple food. And yeah, we're building on culture, on experiences, on doctrinal, you know, understandings of translations. We are building on so much, and we have to know where we come from. We have to be able to sift through all the stuff and be grounded. And really, that grounding, when it comes to our faith, it's in Christ. Our grounding,
it's gotta go back.
Our grounding always has to be in Christ. Because everything else is going to get screwed up at some point or another. If you don't think that's the case, if you think that your theology is rock solid, come back in 10 years and see if it's still the same as it was.
Yeah, it can totally change. And it's where your heart's at, to where you actually are listening to the Lord and looking at what he wants to show you. You know, are you trying to get validated by the world, or are you trying to get validated by him? And all the new stuff that comes out here, as far as whether it's biblical or whether it's part of your hobby, that sort of thing, you know, like you said, you gotta go with the, what's the old phrase? You gotta go to the dance with the girl that brung you.
Yeah.
You know, it's you have to go back to that core. You gotta go back to that central pivot point about which all of this stuff rotates. And that's Christ. That's God. And yeah.
Yeah, I got out of seminary in 2007. It's now 2015. And I promise you that while there are a lot of things that are just fully grounded, and I'd like to say are just solidly set at the foot of Christ, there's a lot of stuff that I believed in 2007 that has changed in the past eight years of doing ministry. It's changed. Mm. But that's that core, that neck deep. There's a lot of new hotness, and some of it I buy into, and some of it I don't. But it always comes back to that core.
I hear that.
All right, Jeff, tell the people what you're excited about. Tell them how they can get in touch with you.
Well, I began with it. I'll end with it. I'm totally stoked for Victoriana. I'm really looking forward to sitting down around the table and getting into some steampunk Shadowrun, as it's kind of known out in the street. But other than that, it's just getting into board games, getting into more some more role playing games. So I'm looking forward to that. Plus my trip up the mountain with Tokaido. I'll definitely be looking to get a report on how that goes.
And I'm gonna say that something that's been lacking. I mean, we mentioned that you can always find our contact page on inroadsministries.com, and I'm gonna tell you that again. However, I'm going to stress the fact that Jeff can actually be reached at jeff@inroadsministries.com.
That's right. Definitely email me if you've got questions or if you're interested in wanting to see another game out there on En-ROADS, or you want to participate in an En-ROADS plays. Shoot me an email, guys. I totally want to hear from you. You can find me on Facebook. I'll be running around in the tavern and posting randomness, like electing Cthulhu for 2016. Whatever. I'll be doing stuff like that.
You can find all of us and all of our contact information on inroadsministries.com. You can find out what we do. You can find out information about TavernCon and about how you can donate to us and the new ministry that we've been building for the past, going on 2 years now.
Praise the
And
Lord.
you can always find us on various social media. I'm on Facebook. You can hang out with us on Facebook at the Tavern. Links again on our site. I am also found on Twitter. My personal account is at Mike the Bard, and the En-ROADS is just at En-ROADS, InNROADS. And as always, guys, I think it's my, I think, let's alternate, and I think
Your
that
turn.
means it's my turn. Always remember, guys, God is the game master, and no matter how the dice falls, the game plays on.